This is On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at what is happening in Western New York with news, features, and special guests. Now, here's your host, Penny Wolfgang.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to On Target with your host, Penny Wolfgang. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's my pleasure to be with you every week, and we talk about subjects that we think are important and interesting and educational and topical for all of us who live in the Western New York community. And we're trying very best during this terrible period that we're going through to keep you informed about how things are going during COVID and what activities and particularly cultural places and institutions and events you might still be able to take advantage of. So hopefully we can let you know what's open and what isn't open and what's happening and what you can participate in still during this period of time. And so I was really, really happy to read recently that there was just a great story about an exhibit that's taking place at our very own Buffalo Museum of Science. And I love the Museum of Science because it's so unique and it's such an important part of not only our cultural life here in Western New York, but it's actually a great tourist attraction because it's so fantastic and has such interesting exhibits. And also the Tiff Nature Preserve, which is part of the Buffalo Museum of Science. And I was fortunate not too long ago, actually on Target, well, I guess it was long ago because it was pre-COVID anyway, to have an opportunity to talk to Marissa Wigglesworth, who is the director of the Buffalo Museum of Science. I think actually it was a while ago because actually she was just taking over the role as director. And now here we are, I don't know how many months later, living all through the COVID period and coming out, I want to think on the other end. So hi, Marissa, how are you? And thank you so much for joining us today on Target.
Hi there, I am well and thank you so much for having me.
I was thinking about that when you first became director was when we talked, and we were in person in those days, right here in the studio at Entercom. How long ago was that?
Yes, indeed. It must have been my first many months, and actually in May, I'll have been here in the role at the Buffalo Museum of Science and TIFT for 5 years.
Oh, no,
so
time flies.
It's a good long time ago, I guess.
Time flies. Oh, well, time flies. I think actually we had opportunities to talk more than once because there's been so many fantastic, unique exhibits and activities and taking place over the last 5 years, thanks to your direction. But now we have an opportunity to talk about how the museum has continued to serve Western New York audiences through this pandemic. And I thought we could talk a little bit to start out with about what's been happening in the last year and how you have, to use that famous word, pivoted to make the museum accessible still again to people, to the public.
Yes, absolutely, and you're so right. That word pivot, perhaps followed by nimble, those are definitely, you know, the words of the time. And we are actually very proud of the work that we've done through the museum and TIFT to continue to make our programming available as fully as possible during the pandemic. Early on, very quickly, we began to launch online daily science fair activities. So families could go onto our website, pull down instructions to do a really interesting and fun, but also very simple hands-on science activity using materials that likely a family would find around the house. So that way, every day, we were sharing a little bit of STEM learning content out into the community and accessible for anyone who wanted to take advantage. We also very quickly put on our website virtual tours of our collections and our exhibits. So our really terrific director of collections, Kathy Leacock, who is a marvelous storyteller, filmed a series of short pieces guiding guests virtually through the museum during the time that we could not welcome guests on site. That's what we did, last spring when the museum and TIFT had to close their doors, along with all of Western New York. And since that time, we've continued to evolve our programming, add different kinds of programming, and really just continue to recognize what's working for our audience, what our audience is interested in, and continue to evolve and build, learning as we go. So it's really been, the staff has been just terrific in thinking creatively and being responsive to what we are seeing in the community.
Now, these were, of course, all remote, correct? I mean, nobody was, up until now, I assume, actually physically coming into the museum for a period of time, right?
No, you're absolutely right. All remote. So, of course, our museum does house our unique collection, 750,000 items plus in our collection. So we did have individuals coming into the museum episodically to make sure that the collection remained appropriately cared for and stewarded and was safe. But to your point, we were not doing any programming out of the building, and all of that programming was done remotely all spring and summer.
But it's remarkable that you could, you know, actually, as we talked about, find a way to still be relevant during this time when, you know, visitors were not allowed. And still, the museum, which I think we could talk about a little bit, is so important for our students. It's such an important part of education here in Western New York, correct?
Absolutely, absolutely. You know, in a regular school year, we generally host upwards of 30,000 visiting school students in a single year. So since schools reopened or classes started up again, I should say, in September, we are not yet, you know, hosting school groups. School districts are generally not yet visiting, but we have had the good fortune of among the nimble pivots we've made are to offer virtual field trips to schools. So thanks to funding from AT&T, we have been able to offer virtual field trips to Buffalo Public Schools and City of Niagara Falls Public Schools free of charge. So we call our staff members facilitators of learning. They're going into the classrooms remotely, virtually, and still leading really engaging science learning sessions.
That's so important because the science museums in every district, area, city, whatever, are such an important part of the education. You mentioned STEM before, and I don't know if our listeners know, but STEM education is the important aspect of education in the last couple of years, and science museums are really important to the education of STEM, to the development of STEM.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. STEM, STEM, stands for Science, Technology, Education, and Math. And research shows that young people really think science is interesting, but too often young people struggle with their science classes. They believe that they would rather learn science through hands-on activities and field trips and exposure to STEM professionals rather than through textbooks and lectures. And there's lots of research and data that shows us that. So organizations like the Buffalo Museum of Science and Tift Nature Preserve, we offer those field trips. We offer those hands-on activities. We provide exactly the kind of STEM learning experiences that kids tell us are more compelling. And certainly, we need kids to want to pursue STEM study and STEM careers so that we will continue to be able to meet the workforce needs of our ever more continuously reliant technological society.
Absolutely. You know, I tell you this all the time, but I'll never forget that when I was growing up in New York City, luckily, fortunately, we had the Science Museum of New York City, which as probably is one of the greatest and most well-known in the world, I think. I'm biased. But anyway, and our field trip, quote-unquote, to the Science Museum was the highlight, and I never liked science, and I never understood science, and I have to admit, Fortunately, my daughter and my granddaughter actually are just the opposite. They love it. However, we used to go to the Science Museum and go to the Blue Whale, I'm sure you know, under the Blue Whale in Manhattan, and see all of the different, we'd learn about, you know, the history of the development of science. And we see dinosaurs and everything. But it was so important. But also, it made such an impression on me because just what you said, we actually would be there and see it. And that is what people, that is what young people especially need, like hands-on experience. Now, of course, in those days, there wasn't any hands-on, but I think the role of science museums obviously has changed a lot, and particularly in recent years, right?
Even
even before the pandemic.
Absolutely. Science museums, perhaps, you know, the role of science museums and certainly the way that our visitors want to engage in a science museum. So you mentioned hands-on. The rise of hands-on activities in the science museum started, my goodness, probably 30, 40 years ago even, and has continued to become a more and more important part of the on-site visitor experience for science museums. And much of that's because we know more today about how people learn. And while some people learn very, very well by looking and reading, we know that other people really do need to manipulate something, put their hands on it, and have a tactile experience to learn. So you know, kudos to science museums for really being responsive to that new information and providing what are the best contemporary learning experiences for our audiences.
Right before the pandemic started, you had a very, very, very important exhibition, special exhibition. And it's not the one we're going to talk about now. It was before this.
Right, that's right. Yeah, February a year ago, so February of 2020, we had what was a wonderful privilege for the Buffalo Museum of Science and I'll say for Western New York to host the U.S. premiere of an exhibit from Manchester, England called Golden Mummies of Egypt. And it was really an extraordinary exhibit made up of mummies and other artifacts that had never before traveled outside of their home museum in Manchester. And they left that museum for the first time and came here to Buffalo, the first time the exhibit was ever built. So we were very proud, thrilled to share these glorious artifacts and mummies with the Western New York community. And really, once again, because we recognize that, you know, Western New Yorkers value and appreciate these kinds of rare cultural science learning experiences. Well, just 5 weeks after
right.
we opened,
yeah.
we had to close. So it was a challenging time.
I know, and it was people were so anxious to see it, and it got, you know, so much attention because, as you said, it was unique that we got it here. Maybe we'll get another opportunity, in the future.
Yeah. Yeah, and we did have the good fortune. So the Buffalo Museum of Science, we were able to reopen our doors safely and legally under the public health guidelines in mid-July. So we had the good fortune of being able to ultimately extend the run of that exhibit well past the original end date, which was June, all the way through the end of the calendar year. So while we were not able to host the exhibit in the original model around which there was so much excitement and pride, we were able to make it available to our visitors and our Western New York neighbors for many months and really right up until the end of the calendar year. So that was gratifying in the end.
Right. Next time we're going to get mummies and daddies, right?
No, there you go.
I had to do that.
Yep.
If you just
yep. good archaeologist joke.
I was going to say I'm definitely not the first person. Okay, if you just tuned in. You are listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, and today our guest is Marissa Wigglesworth, who is the director of the Buffalo Museum of Science and also TIFF Nature Preserve. We don't want to leave that out. I think people do forget that very often. But now, what is happening? Can TIFF right now, is TIFF reopened also? I know the Buffalo Museum of Science is limited, and we're going to talk about it, but is TIFF also reopened?
So at TIFF Nature Preserve, the trails at the preserve have remained open throughout the pandemic and even throughout New York's pause. And you likely will recall that that there were certainly periods when our public health advisors were encouraging us
yes.
to take our recreation outside because it was safer. So, you know, we're gratified that TIFF was there for people to go and be able to enjoy some time outdoors safely and take all of the benefits that some time in nature offers. So today, you know, the trails at TIFF are still open each day from dawn till dusk. It is, of course, free to go out and walk the trails. I encourage people to, you know, take a camera, take your snowshoes when there's snow on the ground. If you're a hardy soul, take a fishing pole or a picnic lunch. It's just a glorious place. Now, the Herb and Jane Darling Environmental Education Center at TIFF does remain closed at this point. We are working aggressively to reopen it so that we can continue to invite people in to learn a little bit more about the preserve and use the facilities. And we hope to have it reopened safely soon.
But it's important because, as you pointed out, during the worst of the pandemic, when everything was red or whatever the worst color is and you couldn't do anything, we were encouraged people, they could still go out and take advantage of anything outside, which was we were desperate to do at that point. And
yes.
so I'm so happy that it was available. I want to say that we're always current and we're always talking about, when we can, things that are happening in Western New York that are available to our listeners, and particularly cultural activities. And I can't believe how topical we are talking about the museum, because there was the greatest story in Gusto this past weekend about the new exhibit that you have called Medieval to Metal. And I can't wait for you to tell our listeners on target what that is, what that means, and what the special exhibit is, Marissa.
Yes, thank you. We're really very proud of this exhibit also. It is produced in partnership with the National Guitar Museum, and Medieval to Metal highlights the evolution of the stringed instrument that is today the electric guitar. So it looks at changes in technology, in artistry, and in sound among instruments from thousands of years, literally, as well as from cultures all around the world. So it's a beautiful exhibit, and it's one that I think really speaks to a very, you know, wide breadth of our Western New York population.
I can't understand, and I'm sure people, when they're first listening, what the relationship with a science museum and guitars are.
Yep, what a great question. What a great question. And the exhibit doesn't, when you see it, I think it all makes sense. Of course, the idea of sound is full of scientific principle. Sound comes from resonance and vibration. And then when you think about a particular instrument and how an instrument generates sound, you recognize the importance of different materials or shapes and all of the physics that go into it. So this exhibit presents all of those topic areas in addition to showcasing 40 incredible guitars and history of pop music culture across decades.
I was amazed when I read about it, that there is, when it says medieval to metal, that there the art and evolution of the guitar that it goes back to ancient times, the beginning of which I think is part of your exhibit, which it shows how it developed over the years from from all the way to, as you point out, medieval times until now.
Indeed, and in fact, Medieval to Metal, presents a terrific title featuring those double M's. However, we have some instruments in the exhibit that well predate the medieval period of history in human development. So there's one particular instrument called the oud from Africa, which is thousands of years old, in fact, so well before the time period we recognize as medieval. So, the terrific, catchy title, but in fact, the exhibit tells an even bigger story.
And let's talk about the actual what's there that people can see when they come, what the exhibit, you know, the different parts and what they can do, how they can do hands-on.
Yeah. So there are 40 guitars on display. And then beyond the guitars, there are a number of, as you say, hands-on activities. And most of those explore some of the things I mentioned earlier, like the differences in materials for strings or additional exploration of how sound is produced via vibration. So there are a number of stations where kids and adults can actually, explore, again, in a tactile sense. So many of us learn best that way. In addition to that, there's a wonderful exhibit within the exhibit by designer, a gentleman named Gerard Huerta, who is a very well-known graphic designer, font designer, and illustrator for the music industry. And he has created a number of pencil drawings of classic guitar designs that are presented within the exhibit. And what's really marvelous about these particular images and the particular guitars that he features are that they are unchanged mostly from when they were first crafted. And it's really bringing it back to technology. It's remarkable to think about. If you think about a telephone and the first telephones, and you think about what a telephone looks like today and how vastly different that is, it's quite surprising to look at some of these iconic guitars and recognize that in the years or decades since that particular model was developed and promoted, it remains unchanged because it was so iconic and continues to serve its purpose so well. So those are just a couple of examples of the kinds of things in the exhibit, but truly something for audiences of all ages.
It's just amazing to me, as I said, that we can make something which is such a pop kind of culture thing and make it relate to science and to modern days, bringing it all back to modern days. So now, I know that there's safety precautions and that in order to open, you have, you know, certain regulations relating to resulting because of the pandemic. Can you tell our listeners, like, how would they get to see this? What would they have to do to come to the exhibit?
Absolutely. So the first thing is that we are operating at than 25% capacity, and the 25% capacity is per public health directives. So tickets are limited. So we do encourage anybody interested in visiting to reserve their tickets in advance. We just would not want anybody to intend to walk up and buy a ticket and come in just then because the chance of tickets having been sold out for that morning or that time slot could be high. So certainly we encourage anyone interested in visiting our website or calling our main number and reserve your tickets in advance. And then when you come in to visit, everyone must have a face mask. We ask people to be attentive to ensuring that each person is maintaining the appropriate social distancing standards. And for each guest, we provide a stylus, a small tool, looks like a pen, that you guests are encouraged to use to manipulate any interactives or buttons or touch screens at the museum. This way, you're doing it with the stylus rather than with your hand, and it reduces the risk of transmission. So those are the big ones. Think about reserving your tickets in advance. When you get here, you must have a face mask. You must maintain social distance. And then please do use that stylus that we'll give you for free when you come in.
And of course, besides, if you do make the reservation and come, besides artistry and music, medieval to metal, the names that we're calling the art and evolution of the guitar, I'm assuming that people now can take advantage of the other exhibitions that are permanent, that are at the Science Museum all the time?
Yes, indeed. All of the exhibits on our second, third, and fourth floors are open and free to enjoy. And, of course, all of that and Medieval to Metal is included with that one admission price, free for members. Our first floor does remain closed, and that's where we have the auditorium. We are not yet showing films and our concessions, so we have not yet reopened our concession stand. Also, our exhibit called Explorations for our youngest visitors. It's our toddlers exhibit that we have not yet reopened those spaces, but all the exhibits on the second, third, and fourth floors are open.
It's so encouraging, and it's so, you know, now that we're feeling the light at the end of the tunnel, that people can look forward to, again, to go to a museum, to go to the science museum, to do other things. How long is the special Medieval to Metal exhibit going to be open?
That exhibit is with us, through the summer and into early September. So it is a nice long run. That was intentional on our part because we recognize that so much is changing. And while people may not be in a position or perhaps may not be comfortable coming into a science museum today or even this winter, you know, hopefully enough will change across society with vaccinations and public health standards in general that by June, July, August, those individuals will be in a position to come out and visit with us. So it's a nice long run, and we look forward to lots of people coming to see it.
I'm so glad because it's something kind of cutting across all generations. And I know one of the missions of the Science Museum is to, as we talked about before, get young people interested in science. And here you are with something to do with guitars, which you definitely wouldn't, as I said, ordinarily associate with the Science Museum, which is going to bring maybe just different people, different generation to the Science Museum. So I'm really happy about that. Could you just tell us again, or actually we didn't, what the where the Science Museum is and where online or how online people can get tickets?
Sure. Sure. So we are located in Martin Luther King Park here on the east side of Buffalo, and it's really incredibly easy access off the Kensington. So off Route 33, it's a couple of turns, and you're right at our free parking at our front door. So we're super easy museum to visit. We encourage people to book those tickets in advance on our website, and that's sciencebuff.org. The main telephone number for the organization is also available on the website, and the folks answering that phone can also assist with booking tickets.
Thank you so much. It was just wonderful talking to you. And I don't know, it just cheers me up, and I hope our listeners to know that now there's, you know, things seem to be, as I said, going in the right direction, and there's going to be our cultural activities are going to be available. Our very, very important institutions are going to be available, such as the Buffalo Museum of Science. And thank you so much for talking to us, Marissa. And hey, thanks everybody for listening to On Target. We hope you've enjoyed our conversation, and we'll join us again next week on the same station at the same time. Have a good week, everybody. Bye now.
You've been listening to On Target with Penny Wolfgang, a program that takes an inside look at Western New York and our community. If you have any comments or suggestions, please write to Penny Wolfgang at 500 Corporate Parkway, Suite 200, Amherst, New York, 14226.